on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, there is news. News, news, news. Kyle Schwarber back to the Philadelphia Phillies. 5 years, $150 million. Edwin Diaz going to the Dodgers on a 3-year, $69 million deal. We're here at the winter meetings. Stuff's finally happening. Let's get to it. Hello and welcome to an emergency episode of Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that would qualify a signing as an emergency. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. I hope everyone is okay.
I still detest the phrase emergency podcast. However, after almost 48 hours of nothing happening at the winter meetings, with all due respect to Mike Soroka and Steven Matz, this was quite a rush and did have the lobby a-buzzin', the reporters a-scurrying, and us running up to our hotel rooms to record this episode of Baseball Barbacast, all about two significant transactions that have reportedly taken place or at least have been agreed upon. And we are going to begin with the one that is less surprising, or is it more surprising than the other one, but also not that surprising. And that is Edwin Diaz agreeing to a deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers, the top closer available on the free agent market this winter. We wondered, would he actually leave the Mets? He opted out of the 2 years remaining on his contract. That made sense because he's very good and deserved more money than he was scheduled to be paid. But it felt like the Mets were going to bring him back. They signed Devin Williams, and it was like, okay, is that a replacement for Edwin Diaz, or is he going to join Edwin Diaz in a much improved Mets bullpen? And instead, the Dodgers, after essentially not having a bullpen functional in October and winning the World Series anyway, decide we're still the Dodgers and give Edwin Diaz a record-setting AAV for 3 years and $69 million. $23 million AAV for a closer is a lot of money. But Edwin Diaz, if anyone deserves it, it is probably him. Jake Mintz, take it away.
I think that's it. Like, we can end the pod now because baseball's ruined again. Because the Dodgers are ruining. So I think we can just kind of scrap it here.
Actually, yeah. When it kind of broke, you could kind of see the winter meetings just start to disperse.
Everyone left.
See people kind they of. Said, everyone no was point. Like, that's it. That's
Wrap
all,
it up.
Folks.
This is a no-brainer for the Dodgers, in my opinion. It feels like time and time again with big free agents want to do the short-term high AAV deal. Like, you always hear, oh, the Dodgers would be in on that guy for a lower year and higher AAV total. And it's interesting to me that the Mets didn't top this, is my first thought. I'm sure we'll get some reporting about how high the Mets went and how much they were invested here and how interested they were. But my first reaction, I think, is surprise, right? Like, we were so sure that Diaz was staying, or at least that he would opt in to the remaining money on his deal, because it was a lot of money for a closer at his age, to the point that he was not on our, like, free agent list radar. I was doing free agent updates all year, and I didn't even put him on the list until like the very end because I didn't think he was going to opt. And so to go from where I was, maybe I was wrong in that regard, but to go from that point to him just not being on the Mets anymore just feels like very, like, jarring whiplash for a player that has been as culturally integral to that team as Alonso and Lindor and McNeil and Nimmo, right? Like, he is the fifth character and the only one of that group who is a pitcher. And so it is bizarre to think that he is gone. We'll return to the Mets in a second, but just from the Dodgers' perspective, like, the money isn't real, right? It's just not an impediment in any meaningful way. And so why wouldn't you pay a lot of money to get the best player at a position that is the biggest hole on your roster? Andrew Friedman is one of the best general managers in the sport, I think I could have identified this one. You know what I mean? Like, I think if I was the Pobo of the Dodgers and so were you, we'd be like, you know who would fit? I think Edwin Diaz would help our ball club.
Yeah, I think, but the larger context of having, you know, a year after they gave Tanner Scott $72 million and that was a disaster, I'm confident Tanner Scott will be better next year and more helpful to their bullpen. Also, the context of, as I joked, but also is true, right? Like, they essentially went bullpenless in the postseason and just started their way to a World Series. And that required some truly heroic efforts on multiple account, you know, at multiple intervals. But
wait, I like to think that the first offseason meeting for the Dodgers was like, all right, that Yamamoto thing, that was cool. Let's never let that happen again.
Right. I think, yes. But I think even more importantly, Edwin Diaz, while in theory, he, as again, they thought Tanner Scott also would help them win postseason games, it's also about how can we win the division without sweating in a way that they did, you know, the regular season. While, yes, we've criticized them for being on autopilot in some respects, like, that's also a big part of why it was not, they did not win 120 games or even 110 games or even 100 games, right? And so Edwin Diaz, at the very least, feels like a really safe bet to make winning in the winning in the regular season a lot easier. And that has compounding effects of just how you're able to manage your roster and manage other things. And so there's just, when you talk about, well, do they really need this other guy when they just did it without a closer? It's like, okay, do the Dodgers need anything? Whatever. But to your point, clearly money is not an impediment. And yes, when you're this far over the luxury tax, there are significant penalties for signing free agents like this. They're losing to their second and fifth highest paid draft picks. They're losing $1 million in international money. But the Dodgers have proven, who cares what draft picks we have? We're going to draft good players wherever we're picking, however much money we're working with. That's part of what makes them so successful, is they never pick at the top, and it doesn't matter. They still have a top farm system. So those are, in theory, the real penalties of spending so far over, but they're not impediments. And as we know, cash flow is not a concern. And so to your point, this was a clear need. And he was the best available. And I think the surprise for me, because when we speculated about Diaz in particular, and I said, I was like, well, the reason I keep coming back to the Mets is, who else is going to pay what Diaz is looking for? And I would have thought that there would have been more teams, whether it was the Mets, whether it was the Blue Jays, that would be willing to beat this, whether that was just a fourth year for $80 million, you know? That is the part that's surprising, I think, a little bit. And maybe that's just, well, that nobody is comfortable paying a reliever that much. And hilariously, the Dodgers, as demonstrated last year with Tanner Scott, are. And they can afford to take more risks than other teams can't. So I imagine the Diaz market, no matter what, was pretty small. But that's the part that is a little bit surprising to me, that this number, while a record AAV, is still, for what is considered at worst, you know, the second or third worst reliever in the game, or best reliever in the game. You know, I think it makes sense that the Dodgers ended up just making it happen.
Well, this is just something else to remember about the Dodgers, is the draw of the place of being a Dodger is not just the money. Like, the money helps and it's significant, but it's not as if Edwin Diaz is getting $69 million to play in Siberia on a team that doesn't compete, right? He is going to the organization with all these other structural advantages that we know for a fact are draws to players, right? I think Dave Roberts had a quote about this yesterday, where about the salary cap, where he was like, look, we dominate now. I think with a salary cap, we would dominate too. Like, I still think we would be great. And I believe that to a pretty large extent. And I would be interested to hear from Diaz, and we'll hear from him eventually, about what went into this, right? Did he turn down comparable or bigger money from the Mets to go to the Dodgers because he wants to win a World Series, and that's a better place to do it, right? And if that's the case, okay, here we go. What's more painful for Mets fans? Okay. The Mets not meeting the number, or Diaz picking the Dodgers anyway?
And that's another good way to phrase it, because it's just like, it's hard to imagine the Mets offer was that far lower than this, unless the truth is they just were ready to move on for whatever reason, and they believe in Devin Williams, and or they still have another go sign Robert Suarez, go sign whatever. That's still on the table, and maybe they add that. You could say that's not better than Edwin Diaz, and you are probably right. But yeah, this is not a number where you could say, well, there's other teams obviously that say, well, the Dodgers just blew us out of the water or whatever. Like, we had no chance to spend as much. That's certainly the case. It's a contract that's so far above what anyone else is willing to take. Certainly doesn't look like a deal that would be out of the range of what the Mets would be willing or want to do if they are genuine about wanting to keep Edwin Diaz, which why wouldn't they be?
I agree with you.
It's interesting.
Hate this for the Mets. Now, their offseason is not over, and every team's winner should be evaluated when they show up to camp or on opening day, right? But even if they go out and continue to solidify the bullpen, what you do is you are working from behind as far as the fan sentiment is concerned, right? Because Edwin Diaz is one of the most popular Mets of the last decade. Now, it wasn't always that way. There were some rocky moments in there. But, I mean, the Timmy Trumpets thing was like one of the biggest phenomenons in the sport at a time, right? Like, that was a BFD. And I think that the fan base right now is like, okay, David Stearns, be as good as we were told you are, right? Because we are coming off a season, we're coming off a season where a little bit of the sheen wore off, a lot of the sheen wore off. And if he is going to try and get too cute here again, that's where I am concerned. Because if you really want to boil the 2025 Mets and why did they not make the playoffs down to one thing, in my opinion, is that the Mets got too cute with their starting rotation, right? That they were like, oh, instead of signing good pitchers, we'll sign solid ones that we think we can make better. And it worked, and then it didn't, right? And if they're going to try and now do that with the bullpen, like if they go out and they sign Brad Keller for 2 years and they're like, oh, we think there's like another level here to Brad Keller, and then it goes belly up, like, and Edwin Diaz is Edwin Diaz, I think we'll be looking back at today as kind of a turning point, potentially.
So regardless, I think this is a good transition to our second transaction, which I don't even think we mentioned yet. Kyle Schwarber's going back to the Phillies. Again, not a huge surprise. But I think that it is the two even bigger picture, regardless of the specific roster building that we are going to watch with the Mets over the rest of the offseason, is that over the last few years, it has been a transition to this team. Two things. One, in like David Stearns' image, as dramatic as that sounds, right? Like, it's like, okay, now he is making it the way that he wants to see it. But also, there is it is funny when you say, what is the other way that when Steve Cohen started to make things happen, it was like, well, what do they want to be? What do they want to become?
The Dodgers.
The Dodgers. And so, and how the Dodgers have operated has honestly changed in some respects since Steve Cohen kind of just said that.
Super important point. Because Andrew Friedman, for a long time, was getting too cute. Right?
Yes, you could argue that, right? And since then, the Dodgers have just been like, screw it, we're spending everything. And some of these moves have been bad. They have whiffed. And obviously, they're doing it, whether it's Conforto and Tanner Scott and whatever. But they've also are doing so much else right. And you could still argue that there's been a lot of progress made on the lower levels development with what the Mets operation is. And there's still ways that they can improve. And that's a big part of what it is. It's not just about how you're spending. But there is something funny about that, where it's like, okay, we want to be like them. And then here's the team that you're trying to be like, okay, like, sure, we'll just give the best closer in baseball what he wants. And then we move on. A team that, you are directly competing with as a National League powerhouse.
Contender. Now, there's also an interesting conversation to be had here about like fan service and like acquiescing the fan base compared to what's best for a roster.
Sure.
And I think that like that is important to understand. Not every player that means something to a fan base. Like, if you acted emotionally as a GM every time, you would be bad, right? This is like, I always think of when the Giants gave Marco Scudero like a 3-year deal at age 38 after he was good in the World Series, right? Like, not every like popular player should stick around on a big deal, right? Diaz, to me, I think passes the threshold though, where I like, okay, would you, if you're a Mets fan, would you rather have Robert Suarez, who they, I think, kind of have to go get now, and Devin Williams, or Edwin Diaz and insert here, right? Okay, so like, what's a better roster? Probably Williams and Suarez. That's probably a better bullpen, but like, you're working up against it, right? And I guess my concern is like, if, again, something, having been around Carlos Mendoza a lot, something he has said time and time again is all of the BS, all the noise, all of the clubhouse Discord gobbledygook, that all fades away if you win. Everything fades away if you win and if it works, right? And if this Mets pivot works and they win the World Series, no one's going to miss Edwin Diaz. And if they don't make the playoffs, everyone's going to be yelling at David Stearns about Edwin Diaz. And that's really just what it comes down to in the end.
Yeah. And I think that's the last thing, too, that helps us kind of transition to Schwarber is, well, one, just on that point, you know, when teams are making these big decisions about popular players, when we're talking about contracts of this size, I mean, this is a lot of money, of course, for a reliever, but this is not even like when we're talking about, you know, the Vlad Jr. extension conversations, when we're talking about like $500 million, like 15-year commitment. Is this the guy that is like just clearly the pillar? Like, to the Mets, I'm sorry, anything under $100 million should not be that much of a discussion. You know, it's just not, if you view it as important or not. So I want to make that point. But again, back to the bigger picture, and as we move to Schwarber, the reason I mentioned about like the Mets slowly becoming more about David Stearns is like, they've had this core of good players, recognizable players. They move on from Nimmo. They move on from Diaz, or Diaz moves on from them, I should say. Pete could very well also be gone. And we're slowly seeing this transition to a next kind of chapter where it's Soto, it's Lindor, it's this next group of young pitchers and hitters, hopefully. That's just it's a different time for the Mets. Whereas you then still have, of course, the Phillies in the move we're going to talk about after the break here, hanging on to everybody you know and everything that has kept you good and relevant. And we're just going to just ride it out as long as we can. And those are two different approaches. And that fans will respond. You will see.
Matters if it works.
Of course.
It just matters if it works. Yeah. Because like, right now, Phillies fans are like, this is like going down with the ship. Like, these are my guys, Kyle Schwarber forever, like Bryce Harper's blood, whatever, you know. Yeah. Whereas for the Mets, it's like, oh, it's a new era. Like, this is so scary.
It's like, I don't know, right? Yeah. So again, and it might be better. It might be a better team. It might project for a higher F war, but we're going to find out. All right, let's take a break. When we return, Kyle Schwarber, an even richer man than he was before.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Last night, Jake Mintz and Jordan Schusterman were downstairs at the lobby bar, throwing them back with members of the baseball community. And a friend of ours who works for a team that will not be named said, what kind of dope you got on Schwarber? You know, like, you know, you this happens sometime, like everyone's joking and then someone's voice gets a little quiet. And they're like, what do you really got? And I said two things to this friend of ours. I said, I would be floored and shocked if he did not come back to Philly. And I do not think it will happen this week. Jake Mintz, 1-for-2. Because Kyle Schwarber.
Ben, 500. Pretty good.
Not bad. Hall of Famer. Kyle Schwarber heading back to the Philadelphia Phillies on a 5-year, $150 million deal. Now, I will say the reason that I was like somewhat skeptical it was going to happen this week, Kyle Schwarber either just had a kid or is having a kid this week. Congratulations to the Schwarbers. And I thought that that might preclude the finalization of a contract. Turns out they have phones in hospitals. George Huesterman, this deal is both obvious and important. It, as we mentioned before, it solidifies the Phillies on this path that this is where we're going. We're not changing. We're not mixing it up. These are our people, and this era of Phillies baseball will either end in glory or disappointment, but it will end with these main characters, mm-hmm. for better or for worse.
You know, we've had some amount of turnover, and even last year when we thought they might shake it up more, they really didn't. You know, they bring in Lizardo. That's a good addition. Now, Ranger Suarez seems very likely to move on. So we're going to have a little bit of turnover. But Schwarber has, of course, emerged and kind of ascended to the guy. You know, he's the guy. And especially this past year where this was really the first year where he was so much better than Bryce Harper. Right? Like, usually Schwarber and Bryce, from a production standpoint, have at least been comparable to where you're still like, this is obviously Bryce Harper's team. But now, Schwarber this past year, it's like, from a production standpoint, it was like, this is the most important hitter we have. And I think that this contract, a 5-year, $150 million deal for a designated hitter already in his 30s, is a reflection of that. I would just quickly on the contract, on the amount. This is pretty simple, right? There were a lot of people bidding for Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
And it was just going to take that fifth year. So if you looked at all the smart people projecting the contracts and they say, oh, man, this is a lot. How long are you going to go for the DH?
Right.
4 years, 120. 4 years, 130. 4 years, 110. Yep. It's like you just tack on that last year and you get the deal done. Because clearly he wanted to stay. They said, we're going to do what we can to keep him because of how important he is for all the reasons that you're about to talk about. And so it just getting to that fifth year, this is the part of free agency that just doesn't surprise me anymore. Sometimes you get it when it's like 11 years or it's like, oh my God. But
yeah,
in this case, this is kind of how I expected it would go. There would be a lot of people interested, and then
so
the Phillies would kind of make sure they made it happen.
A couple things here, having been around him and been around that team. So the headline with Schwarber obviously is, that's a ton of money and a lot of years for a player of his age who's a DH, right? That's kind of striking. Teams don't usually like to clog up that DH spot, especially with players on that side of 30. Kyle Schwarber, though, even while he is a DH, it is tough to describe him as a one-dimensional character, as a one-dimensional player. That is because of his ability to hit left-handed pitching. And the way that he has progressed against same-sided arms elevates him into a special category of hitter. And then on top of that, when you account for how important he is in that room, the Phillies were never going to want to live life without Kyle Schwarber. And I think the only way he would have ended up elsewhere is if, like, the Reds, where he's from, or the Cubs beat this number and got close
Pirates
to it.
Come on now.
Sure, but that was never going to happen. That's the thing, right? Would another team get close to this number? Maybe, probably not. But, like, the Phillies were not going to get beat on this. They were not. Right? Because he's just too important to the operation at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And teams like the Pirates and the Reds, and we'll find out who finished second or whatever.
The Orioles were mentioned.
Orioles, sure. Red Sox. The front office computers, there's none of them had a number that said, yes, we should pay this 33-year-old DH $100 million. That was all, whether it's Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, it would have essentially, it clearly did require ownership to decide, we'll just go essentially empty everything for Kyle Schwarber. And if for whatever reason the Phillies are not interested in matching, we'll maybe get him. But there wasn't going to be, this is not the kind of player that you were going to be able to do that for, because it's just, that's just not how a modern front office is going to tell you to value him. Yeah.
The Phillies are the only team that know the real value.
Right.
Or at least think they know the real value, right? And so what that means is, if everyone's model says that Kyle Schwarber is worth, you know, $400, which is what I believe he got last time, if everyone says he's worth $400, well, then you have, like, the number's obviously going to be higher than that, but you, to get to that higher number, you have to convince yourself that it's worth it. And it's just easier for the Phillies to do that because they get the rest of the Schwarberiness of it all.
Yeah, but that's the last part. 479 is what he got last time. And I think that's the last point here is, and you sort of hit on it, mentioning the left-handed pitching. Is Kyle Schwarber going to be a great contract at age 30, you know, at age 37? Probably not. But this dude just had his best season. And he has demonstrated an ability to improve even as he's gotten older. He didn't miss a game, right? We're talking over 700 plate appearances, 162 games. If you're going to pay a DH, this is it. And that's even before you get to the leadership qualities that we know are very, very valuable. This is a guy that if you can have in your lineup every day, that is worth a lot of money. And I don't really care what the positional adjustment tells me about how much WAR he's capable of accruing, because I do believe that a bat that's this good is worth $30 million a year. I don't care that he's not playing defense. Maybe that's a basic take, but I really do think so. I get it.
I totally agree. And I mean, this is also plays into the career arc of Kyle Schwarber, right? When he comes up with the Cubs, he's kind of doughy. And the conversation about Schwarber is like, look at this chonky looking little fist-shaped guy who swings really hard. That's not what he's built like anymore, dude. Like, Kyle Schwarber remade his body. He is ripped and he is slim and he is cut, and he is not going to let himself, he is going to do everything possible to be as good as long as he can. The money that he gets in this contract is not going to turn him into a lazy bum. He is not going to rest on his laurels, right? He is going to get every last ounce out of his abilities. I was having a conversation with another team employee friend of ours last night about makeup and player makeup and how he thinks about player makeup in three groups. 10% of players are their makeup is a detriment to them getting the most of their abilities. 80% are in a similar category. And then 10% of guys are on the far end. And when I asked who are players on that far end, immediately went to Schwarber, Bregman, right? Those are the two in the game right now where the argument, he's a good clubhouse guy, is just this lazy thing that we often throw around. But for the dudes who move the needle, it's not just that you feel good about having them around other players. You feel good about them always getting the most of what they can contribute, right? And that makes you more comfortable committing to them as they age. Yeah. And because they're going to continue to adapt and find new ways to be competitive. And I think that is very much the case with Schwarber. Okay, so two more things on this. What does this mean for the rest of the Phillies winter? I think is a little interesting to start. Bellinger probably off the table now for them. I still think there's a chance they move Alec Bohm. I still think there's a chance they move Matt Strom. I think that they need to figure out their outfield mix. And I think they need to go sign JT Realmuto. The one open role on this team, though, is there is an open rotation spot before Andrew Painter arrives. And he did not show well enough where you're he's going to be in the rotation to start next season. So I'm very interested to see if the Phillies decide to add a starter at this point. Who is right now their fourth starter would be Taijuan Walker until Zach Wheeler gets back. When Wheeler does presumably return, you have Sanchez, Lizardo, Nola, and Walker. Do they add an arm to that mix? Do they not? Where do you think the Phillies go from here?
Yeah. Do they, we know Dombrowski's not afraid to trade, right? And if you know, you're not trying to add too much payroll, maybe you can find a controllable starter that you can go out and find and trade a bunch more prospects that Dombrowski doesn't care about. You know, obviously there's a group that they're expecting to contribute in 26, whether that's Painter, whether that's Justin Crawford, that they probably don't want to touch. Aiden Miller, we'll see if he falls in that bucket. But I'm sure Dombrowski would be willing to swing a deal for a starter just like he did a year ago for Lizardo. But the outfield is not like, I don't know, man. That is certainly not looking like a championship outfield right now. They still have to find a way to dump Nick Castellanos in some way. Marsh, I just don't believe is a quality everyday player at this point. And they really seem to believe in Crawford, but that's a lot to expect in the kids. So how much more are they going to spend? I do think that there will be one more addition that's not just keeping guys in house. The Real Muto thing will be interesting to watch. How much does that cost? But I guess the last thing on the Phillies is also some other bit of news. And again, continuing with the theme of continuity, is extend Rob Thompson, and have not officially announced it yet, but it sure seems like Don Mattingly is going to be coming in as the bench coach. Which is interesting for, I think, a few reasons that you can talk about here as we wrap up. But obviously, Don Mattingly, a new face of the coaching staff, but Thompson still sticking around. And again, like, Thompson's been part of this conversation too, when we've wondered if it would suddenly be a new era for the Phillies and they'd start to shake things up and trade some guys and maybe move on to a new manager, as they've kind of trended in the wrong way in terms of how they finished their season over the last few years. But it seems like Thompson's still in place and extended through 2027.
So I'll start with Thompson. I think that this is your run-of-the-mill, don't want the lame duck manager conversation hanging over the team all year, right?
Yep.
They don't want him to, if they start 5-8, you don't want to have to deal with all that. And like, teams have shown that they're willing to give that extra year extension in order to not have those questions. We saw it like with Ollie Marmol last year, even with Bob Melvin, who ended up getting fired. Like, they'll take that financial hit. They're willing to do it.
Most teams, yeah.
Most teams. As it pertains to Mattingly, fascinating hire. His son, Preston, is, I believe, the GM of the team. Now, he is below Dombrowski very much on the hierarchy. But I love the idea of the dad in the dugout and the son in the box. I think the Mattingly hire is about this. They want someone who's like a veteran baseball guy to be around all these veteran active players. Okay. Think about it this way. When you're bringing in, even if you're bringing in like the best coach in the world, who's young and has some big league experience, the big dogs are only going to listen to them to a certain extent. But if that information is literally coming out of Don Mattingly's mouth, like, you're probably more willing to listen to it. And I think that it will be very helpful for the Phillies to have someone like that around, whose respect is pre-earned, right? Mm. If you're a coach, like, it's good that we have new, interesting, different types of people on coaching staffs, right? But like, and as much as I love Blake Butera, he's going to have to earn the respect of his players as he manages the Nationals. Don Mattingly shows up on day one, it's built in. And I think that that is helpful for such a veteran-laden clubhouse. The last thing we're talking about is, you know, I have the article here from Jeff Passan in front of me over at ESPN. Following a frenzied free agency that saw efforts to sign Schwarber by the New York Mets, Boston Red Sox, Baltimore Orioles, Pittsburgh Pirates, Cincinnati Reds. Like, let's talk about those teams. Teams who, at the very least, were like, Kyle Schwarber could be part of our winter. Where do those teams pivot from here? And what do we learn from this?
I mean, yeah, we're gonna find out, because the obvious place to go is, all right, well, you can't get Schwarber. Who's the other big DHs that we can go sign, or DH types that you can go sign? That's Pete Alonso. That is, even more interestingly, Munetaka Murakami. Now, we've already talked enough about how risky he is and all that associates with that. But if one of these teams does believe in him enough that it's like, yes, BRDH, maybe that's in there. I doubt it. But I think for Pete, it is a very relevant place, a very thing that is going to contribute to how these teams are acting that are desperate to add a no doubt come play 162 games and hit a bunch of home runs. Like, that's not Pete's pretty good version of that too. And so I do think that it will help probably clarify his market a little bit more. And if it also contributes to him leaving the Mets, then that's obviously compelling.
What we learn from this is what our team's willing to do. Now, what they're willing to do for Schwarber is not necessarily what they're willing to do for another player. But it does show a level of interest and investment that can and often does sort of color the way that they act the rest of the winter. And I am now willing to believe that the Pirates are going to do some stuff, man. Like, they're going to
talk like it.
Like, yeah. If they don't, fans can be furious. I think the Orioles making, quote, a strong push here, as Passan said, is very interesting because they have not really signed like a big multi-year free agent under David Rubenstein, the new owner. It seems like they were willing to do that for Schwarber to a point. The Mets being interested is compelling because it shows that they are willing to move on from Pete to a certain extent, right? And as it goes for the Red Sox, I think the Red Sox just watched their games back and was like, we just need more MFers in this lineup. Like, we just need more guys that just no doubt bang. And were willing to do whatever they needed to get Schwarber in there, but apparently not whatever they needed. Anything else, Jordan, before we sign off?
We should stop talking. Obviously, there is a very relevant and interesting, we're talking about, you know, Pete Alonso. This all broke while Scott Boras was doing his winter meetings address. We have a massive Scobo update to do. We're not going to do that right now, but it will, of course, happen at some point this week when we can collect. He also has the Dylan Cease press conference coming up later today, so he will be in the microphone, in front of a microphone again, at least one more time. So we're going to, the Scobo is coming. Boy, did we have some absolute fire coming out today. But also, these two deals breaking at the same time as him talking by two agencies that are not the Boras Corporation with Excel and Wasserman. That's probably going to be an L. Give you a little bit of a spoiler there. But we will get to Scobo later this week. For now, we will stop yapping. Thank Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. And we will be back on these microphones here soon after the draft lottery. What else? Last thing?
Yep. Just got a text from a buddy of ours who's a Mets fan, and it says David Stearns is a fraud. So that's where things are at.
All right, Mets, do something about it. Thanks for listening. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. We'll talk to you soon.